Welcome to the Adversity Psychologist podcast, a podcast incorporating narratives about facing and navigating adversity, a mixture of people, their experiences, and professional psychological discussion. I'm Dr. Tara Quinterillo. I'm a qualified and regulated psychologist with over 20 years' experience of mental health, disability, and human behaviour. I want to share people's stories of navigating adversity in the hope that through being heard, a dose of compassion and some understanding, we can help others in the face of adversity too. Hi, and welcome to the Adversity Psychologist podcast. So I'm Dr. Tara Quinterillo, and on this wonderful sunny spring Friday morning, I have Danny Turner with me from Beyond the Clippers. Would you like to say hello? Tell us a little bit about who you are and what's brought you on, what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, hi guys. I'm Danny. I created a mental health group specifically for the barbering industry. I'm a barber myself, and I saw that there was sort of a bit of a niche in using barbershops as safe places for people to talk, mainly regarding their mental health, but just general conversations and to build up relationships. And it was also something that I created because I suffer with confidence, and I know a lot of barbers do as well. So it was a safe place for barbers to have somewhere that they could chat to one another, bounce ideas off, and yeah, ultimately help their own mental health without having to suffer in silence.
I absolutely love your concept. So we kind of found each other on Instagram not that long ago, actually. And your work really resonated with me, especially around the kind of male mental health. So I've got so many questions for you. Is it right to ask you just the kind of organic question? What made you go, I've got this idea, I've got these observations from your job, to then creating Beyond the Clippers?
So because I suffered with confidence barbering, on Facebook there's a lot of barber groups, and I would often put into chats, does anyone suffer with trying to perfect their haircuts? Does anyone not suffer with self-confidence? And I got a lot of response, and I thought, okay, it's not just me then. Maybe this is an industry-wide issue. Yeah. So it made me think, well, if I'm suffering, if other people are suffering, and there's nothing for, because with the Facebook groups, a lot of it is mainly just new equipment, look at my haircut, what do you think of it? So it's not really a comfortable place to actually put out there, you know what, I'm suffering a little bit, because you don't want backlash, you don't want people to think, you know, well, why are you doing the job if you're not confident? So I put out a poll on Instagram, because most of my followers and who I follow are barbers, and I put, would anyone be interested in a mental health group for barbers to be able to bounce ideas off? And I think I had about 80 comebacks, and everything, it was just 100%, 100%.
Incredible.
Yeah. So from that, I thought, well, let me start with Facebook. So I started a Facebook group just for barbers, which is still going now. And yeah, like on a daily basis, people are messaging, you know, I'm suffering today, or I had this conversation, I don't know what to do. And it's just a safe place for barbers not to feel judged with an issue they have at work. Because it is not a lonely job, but a lot of barbers, you're self-employed.
Yeah.
So although you work in a shop, ultimately you're looking after number one. Yeah. And I found you might not feel comfortable talking to your colleagues because you don't want them to think, well, if they're suffering with their confidence, are they fit for the job?
Yeah. There's that judgment, so that's kind of shame stuff, isn't it?
100%. Yeah, it is judgment. And that's, you don't want that to happen, because you want people to be confident in your ability to cut hair, because that's the service you're selling. But if stuff's going on in your head and you can't focus, it's going to come out in the wash at some point. So I thought, if I create something that's somewhere that people can talk, including myself, then hopefully it's a win-win for everyone.
That kind of idea of like a safe space. So as you say, there's so many points there that, you know, so majority of people being self-employed, so it's your income. So the kind of vulnerability, I guess, that comes around doubting yourself or sharing that could be seen negatively. There's also that kind of big issue of, you know, when we look at research, how less likely men are to reach out for their emotional health, to be okay with wanting to reach out as well, because there's two different things there. I think as a psychologist, there's the recognizing the need, but also the can I then share that. And it is a bit cheesy, but that kind of word, you're starting to normalize having conversations.
Yes.
Not just about the nice, safe logistical stuff, you know. What are you doing practically? Doesn't that just show that 80 people reaching out? Because that's a staggering. Did you expect it to be that many? Did you have an idea?
No, because I'd only spoken to a handful of people who were sort of okay with it. I thought, well, let me put a vote out. And it was just crazy. So I thought, well, you know, 80 people are suffering or feel like they don't have anywhere to turn to. So it's something that's obviously needed, and it was nice to know that it wasn't just me feeling insecure about the job, and it is an industry thing. Yeah, so it's kind of reassuring.
And I'm wondering, people listening, whether you're a barber, whether you're not a barber, or whether you're someone who visits a barber's, just knowing and normalizing these conversations that, you know, we're all humans. We all have a certain amount of capacity to hold other people's stuff. But as a barber, and actually we were talking about this before we hit record, it's not that dissimilar to being a therapist in terms of you're holding all sorts of stuff. But sometimes people get in that chair, hairdressers and a barber, and they just talk, especially if it's someone they're really familiar with. Therefore, it's interesting you said you had people going, what do I do? What do you do with the stuff that you hear? Do you notice a trend more recently in terms of the type of things you're hearing from people?
So it's weird. So I'll always ask how someone is doing, and that can just be the start of them rolling with a conversation. And these are like people that some of them I've never cut their hair before. And then I am quite comfortable opening up about my own experiences and issues. So I've got kids, I've been divorced. So when I relay that to a client, that can sometimes start them to say, well, actually, I'm currently going through a divorce and I'm finding it hard with the kids. And then they ask me, what did I do? And then before you know it, the hair cuts up and we've had a full-blown back and forth about our experiences, what advice I would give. It's sort of, they leave. And then I sort of take a minute and think, oh, I didn't know you half an hour ago. And you've just told me stuff that potentially you've not told your closest friend.
I was wondering that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just all I did was just ask how their day was. Yeah. And it's the thing, I know not all barbers are going to have that conversation because some people don't feel comfortable talking about their own life.
Yeah.
They might not want to, you know, dwell into others. So I think it is personal preference. I'm someone that's very open. So I think that comes across in my conversation. So that was another reason I started this group, because if a client does come to a barber and say, actually, I'm not doing too well, then if I have something in place, they can say, well, actually, we have this information you can turn to, because I've got posters for barbershops. Wow. That's got like information numbers for like Samaritans, food banks, like Gamble Aware. So my aim is to get these posters into shops. So if someone is suffering, then the barbers can say, look, we've got this poster, take it with you. If it's something you need, then give them a call. Because it's tricky because, you know, especially like a young barber or someone who's not dealt with sort of in-depth conversations before. It's a bit daunting to think, well, I don't know what to do in this situation. So that was the idea of trying to get stuff into barbershops as a bit of a foundation for mental health talks. If they don't know what to do, then they can turn to
absolutely
what I'm trying to create. Yeah.
It's so interesting. As you're talking, I'm wondering if you really see what you've created there. Because I guess as a psychologist of many, many, many years, you've covered so many kind of barriers to people talking about mental health, because there's the importance of the safe space, the person who's asking but willing and able to sit with the response. So as human beings, we're not great at sitting with other people's distress. It's why we tend to go into problem solving, fixing, or we don't ask. We just kind of keep conversation light. So to be able to provide, but also hopefully through your social media work, being able to kind of show people how you do that, how you can start to genuinely ask, hold that safe space, so then people feel able, and then presumably coming back again and again.
Yes. Yeah. And people that have come back, I say, you know, how's it going with what we discussed last time? And they're like, oh, you remember?
You remember.
Like, yeah, of course I remember. Wow. We had a real in-depth conversation, and it's something that I've experienced. So it resonated with me. And then from that, and you can see then that confidence builds progressively after each haircut. Yeah. And that's why I always say, a haircut is only a haircut to a point. You could have five barbers in a shop who all produce similar haircuts.
Yeah.
But if you've got a rapport with someone, you're always going to come back to that person because you just have that connection. And that's when it becomes more than a haircut. It becomes, I suppose, like you say, a bit of a therapy session if they want it to be.
Yeah. It's the kind of promoting psychological safety, a safe space. As British people, we are notoriously kind of rubbish at the old checking in, because we tend to do it as we're walking past on the school path, how are you doing? And we're not stopping and necessarily making eye contact or giving off those signals that you've got time or want to hear the response. And sometimes we don't know what to do with it, which is why we'll ask on the go. And these conversations, I think, are so important, because whether someone's a barber or not listening to this, or a customer, it's just even just this basic conversation now around how do you check in with someone and mean it and allow some space for it, because it's not rocket science, is it? It's just about being present. A level of vulnerability, if that's all right, you share your kind of experiences.
Yes. Yeah. And that's why I say I appreciate not everyone's going to want to open up and talk, because I'm comfortable doing that, where I know a lot of people wouldn't be. And it's finding that balance of starting a conversation but not pushing someone into feeling they have to talk. So again, it's that safe place of me saying, how's your week been? If they give me a one word answer, then I know that, okay, this is going to be a normal haircut. So it's gauging each client that's in your chair. And that goes for kids as well, teenagers and like young adults.
Across the age?
Yeah. So especially I'd say secondary school age up. Obviously, below that, it's very much just trying to keep the kid entertained while I cut their hair. But then when you, because I'm 34, so I don't feel like secondary school was miles away from me, although it was. So with secondary school kids, I have a bit of a laugh and, talk about how school is. And then sometimes they may be stressed about exams or... stuff going on at school. So although it's very rare for teenagers to open up, I have had conversations just about general school. And you can see after their haircut, they're a little bit more lifted. Nothing in depth has been spoken about, but just acknowledging that school's a little bit stressful. And they've spoken about it for half an hour. So it's just gauging your audience. And that's different for every person that sits in the chair.
And I think that's really important too. And it's interesting what you kind of said there then, is that sometimes it doesn't have to be a really in-depth conversation. Sometimes just really simple checking in words are what somebody needs. But also you're in that really unique position where most people will tend to come back to the same barber. Guys, the right to generalize, more regularly having haircuts. For me, kind of my kind of hair, it's every few months, but my teenage son will go every 2-3 weeks sometimes for various things. So you'd be forging a different kind of relationship, and that safe space. And in therapy, sometimes it takes a long time to create the kind of safe space for people to really open up, and you're doing that organically, aren't you? You're there. And so that person who maybe has the one word, obviously without kind of breaking confidentiality, but have you seen people who perhaps you've kind of thought, were more reluctant, but where you've noticed those changes in kind of engagement? Or as you said at the beginning, it's the connection as well.
And I know I said sort of secondary school up, but even with it can even be said for younger kids, because they can be really nervous. I remember one lad, he must have only been about six, and he was really nervous, and I cut his hair for the first time, and we had a common interest in wrestling. So when I was his age, like, I just love wrestling, so all we did was speak about wrestling for half an hour. And his mum was like, I've never heard him talk so much. And then from then he would always come back to me, because he knew that he could talk about what he loved. So although it's not a mental health thing, it's showing that connection of finding a common interest and building a relationship. And that goes for all ages. So that's really nice. But with men, you find by the third or fourth haircut, you're then talking about stuff you spoke about, the first or second time. And then that just, like you say, that just organically grows into, it then turns into a catch up rather than a conversation.
And do you think that helps? Do you think that helps people to open up a bit more, that it's this catch up and it's normal, it's a routine, it's the haircut? I'm going to talk and I have to share, or, the kind of boundaries.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if they get a confidence that, the last time I saw Danny, we spoke about, X, Y, Z. And then when he comes in again and I say, how are things? And it's like, actually, he cares and he remembers.
Yes. It must be so important.
Because we see a lot of people, and obviously some conversations or some clients will stick out more than others because of what's been said, but ultimately for me, because I try and build a relationship with each client, I don't forget what I've said 4 weeks ago. It's just it's just something that gradually just builds. I suppose like any sort of friendship there's some people that are like, they invite their barbers to their weddings, and they're really lovely, good friends, right?
That kind of, as you say, because there's so many offshoots that it's really interesting, isn't it, when we kind of think about, and I sometimes think it's almost unhelpful that we kind of sometimes formalize mental health. I'm going for mental health input support, whereas actually mental health or emotional health is about everyday small things we do to look after ourselves. So what you're doing is actually a really preventative model, as well as sometimes being more reactive if someone's got something. And I love the fact that you signpost, because people could come with anything. It's not just about emotional health. They may have addiction problems. Yeah. As you say, you spoke about gambling. There could be financial problems, we're in a cost of living crisis, all stuff that they may be holding. They may be holding on behalf of families, for example. The far-reaching implications here, they're huge, aren't they, in terms of what you could be doing for people, but also empowering them over perhaps having a safe space to even talk about that feared thing, my gambling issue or the financial issues or whatever that is, to help them perhaps on that journey to problem-solving. Decision making. But I'm guessing as well, you're probably doing a lot of preventive stuff around risk. If we get really nitty gritty, how many people, and men particularly, may sit with those issues and not share? And when we look at suicide rates in the UK, there's some powerful stuff there.
Yeah, and I've experienced that as well. So I've been times in the past where I've sort of been that low that for me, suicide was something. So when I see people at their lowest, it's like I really understand what you're going through. I don't say that, but I'd sort of connection wise, I really feel it. And I think with barbershops, like you say, it's a preventative thing.
Yeah.
Catching someone before they go down a dark route.
Absolutely.
I think that's the most important thing, because I've had conversations with people, and they'll talk about they might say, I'm gambling. I find that I'm gambling a little bit more than I used to, or I'm drinking more than I used to.
Yeah,
and it's difficult because I'm not. I don't want to say anything that sounds like I'm judging.
Absolutely.
But I think for me, it's been like, well, just keep an eye on it, like, to see how you're getting on. And if it is something you find that is getting out of control, try and speak to someone, because the fact that they're acknowledging it shows that they can see it's a becoming a problem.
Yeah. And sometimes, as you say, we know the difference between kind of verbalizing something versus holding in your head. So someone starting to say, actually, I've noticed this, is quite a profound thing, actually. But the fact that you can kind of signpost that, you've got flyers, posters, that also take some of the pressure of, hey, look, here are numbers. And that also normalizes, lots of other people also struggle with these things. And that's why they're are these organizations.
Yes.
That's, again, it's pretty powerful stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. Because, I mean, these places are well advertised, but I suppose not everyone's going to think, well, I'm suffering or I'm gambling a little bit more than I used to. Let me call Gamble Aware, or let me call, you know, the Samaritans if I'm feeling very low. But if there's a poster that they see,
absolutely,
if they're waiting for their cut and they look at a post and they see a number and think, actually, yeah, I probably am gambling a little bit more than I usually. I mean, they don't have to, not even for them to call it, but for them just to get that thought process of,
actually, that's what I was thinking as well.
Yeah, actually, or, you know, there's like one of the numbers is for a food bank.
Yes.
And people might not know that that's an option out there.
Absolutely.
Because for a lot of people, it's embarrassing to say, I can't feed myself, I can't feed my kids. It's breaking past that, and that's where that stigma comes in of men not talking, because it's the stiff upper lip and I'll deal with it in my own way. Yeah. And then sometimes that just gets to a point where it's just, you can't do it anymore.
And it's the kind of people like you starting to address that, but also telling people, this is a thing, there is stigma and shame around this, particularly for men. But also what I really love, because I've been following your kind of social media posts, and there's a kind of a, let me know a bit more, the kind of Barber TV that shared as
so
well.
That's like,
it's about men have conversations and what's different about those conversations that you're kind of tapping into, that it is a different way of talking. When men go out, they talk differently than women would talk together when they're out. And you're tapping into that and kind of helping them to express themselves in a way that's suitable for them. And I think that's quite special.
Yeah. So the Barber Coach TV, so that's a platform for students and barbers to sort of further their knowledge.
Right.
It's got videos of haircuts, how to do certain styles. And I messaged the guy on Instagram and said, look, I really like your platform, but would you be interested in a mental health side of it for students coming through? And he was like, 100%, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I just done it on a whim because I thought, I don't know if he's gonna go for this. But he bit my arm off. So he made me like an educator, and my first podcast is on there. And then I'm gonna do sort of like short 5-10 minute videos of just what to look out for, and especially like things with social media, because social media is a massive it affected me hugely when I was learning. Because all you've got is these people putting out perfect haircuts.
Yeah.
And you think, mine doesn't look like that. And then you think about it, okay, it's filtered. That's probably not how it actually looked. Or the person that's done it has 20 plus years experience.
Yeah. So all of the things that minds don't think about when they're in threat mode and seeing something and their own imposter syndrome is showing up.
Yeah. And I think with barbering, it's hard not to be a perfectionist, because you're providing a skill, and you're giving someone a service that makes them look or make them feel better. If you get that wrong, they're not going to want to come back to you, which is going to affect your confidence, and that could just steamroll you into a really dark place. So social media is
the kind of pressure that you're under in terms of, it's not just providing a product service, is it? It's what that means to that individual and how that then may impact your well-being.
Yeah, because with someone new in your chair, you only really have one chance to show that you're good at your job.
Yeah.
And word of mouth, even with social media, word of mouth is still the biggest thing. So if you get that wrong, they're going to go tell their friends, well, don't go to that place because look at what he's done. He's given me a rubbish haircut. And you might only be having a bad day because, you know, we're all human and sometimes we're just
off. Absolutely. That kind of cutthroat side of social media, you say, because at the end of the day, we kind of come back to that point you made before that, you know, this is, most people are kind of individual business owners. This is your income. This is the thing that means so much to you. So there's so much tied up, because I've just realized as well, so you're almost supporting the mental health both ends, aren't you? So you're kind of looking at the kind of emotional health of barbers themselves and that new generation coming in, which I love, who will have different perspectives on well-being and how to approach that. So I love the fact that with the Barber TV, it's not just a kind of one-off tokenistic, we've done the box for mental health. It's a consistent thing. It's helping people to maybe incorporate this fully into their practice. But you've also got what you're providing for your customers as well. So you're actually covering a huge demographic there, aren't you?
Yeah. And it did start off, it started off for barbers only.
Yeah.
And then I looked at the bigger picture and thought, well, actually, conversations I've had with clients, it's too big not to expand it to them as well. It's trying to help both sides in the industry, because it's just something that is massive. There's barbershops all over the country that see hundreds of different men each week. It just doesn't make sense that there's not something in place.
It's almost mind-blowing now you say that, isn't it? And, you know, just before we kind of hit record, I'd say, you know, my own hairdresser quite often will say, you know, she's holding stuff. And I kind of thought about that as a psychologist, but I hadn't really thought about it on the scale of which it is, especially for barbers, actually. And that demographic, particularly of men, mental health, preventative stuff. And it's the ripple effect, isn't it? The kind of what you can do with this, where you can go with this. Hence people, you know, I guess we're going to do a kind of big plug. If there's anybody listening who, you know, wants to get in touch with you, please do, you know, if there's anyone who's things they can offer you. Because at the moment, this is you doing this. This is your brainchild.
It is,
Like a lot of great things, they can morph at an intense rate, can't they?
Yeah.
And it's where do you see this going? Do you have an idea? Like where, how would you like your project to go?
Well, I was talking to one of my barber friends, and he said it would be really good if you could get shops to be like an accredited sort of, you know, we're accredited beyond the Clippers that, you know, this shop will support your mental health. And and I know that a lot of shops won't want that, because you've got different shops. So you've got shops that are just conveyor belts. They don't, they won't talk to the client. So it sounds harsh, but I wouldn't focus my attention on them.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
I just know it would just fall on deaf ears.
It'd be disingenuous as well, actually, because what you could have is someone vulnerable going and wanting to sign up and not getting. And as you say, it's like with anything, isn't it? It's got to be organic. It's got to be well-meaning, and that's what makes you, isn't it? Your ethics. You do this because you want to do it, and you genuinely want to hold space for people and help other people to do that.
So So I've already been sending posters to shops up and down the country. So the next step would be looking at trying to get shops to be accredited support, the support's in place if clients or barbers need it. And then also I've been in discussions with like academies and colleges to put like student packs together of what to expect going into the industry for themselves and for conversations they may have with clients, and the stress of being self-employed. So it goes back to that pressure of having to feel you have to perform for each haircut, because ultimately that haircut is your income.
Absolutely.
So the pressure is, I need to get this right, because if they don't come back to me, that's money I've lost, as well as reputation and what have you. So
it's that ripple effect of that. People talk, people go, and people are so quick. You know, we're all guilty of this, aren't we? We do tend to literally quickly go on Amazon when we've done a negative review, but we hardly ever go, oh, put a really positive review of that thing. So unfortunately, we're all guilty of it, a little bit trigger happy with that. You have to kind of hold that, don't you? And as a business, that's quite a lot of pressure, isn't it? In addition to what you're hearing from people as well.
And when you go to college or when you learn, it is just, you're just learning about cutting hair.
Yeah.
which ultimately is, obviously that's what the course is for. But then you go into the world of barbering and then you think, well, I'm on my own now. I have to, you know, I might be able to lean on a manager or a colleague, but ultimately I am now on my own and it can be really daunting, pressure-wise. And then because social media is so current, you look to social media and you think, yeah, okay, mine doesn't look like that. What am I doing wrong? You might not be doing anything wrong. It's just your progress of where you are in your career. And it's just, there's so many different...
stop and catch that brain when it's fast-forwarding with all of the anxiety-led stuff.
Yes.
It's so interesting then. So you go through all that training. I'd never thought about that before, but there isn't anything specific. That's quite mind-blowing about the human who the hair belongs to.
Yeah.
To talk and engage with you. And there's the engaging with you about the haircut and what that means for your business. But there's also... how many people a day, I wonder, are you hearing? Like, how many haircuts on average do the barbers do every day? And some barbers, I know my bloke, it's like 7 days a week.
Yeah.
That's a huge footfall of people, isn't it?
Yes.
So kind of what you're doing, catching people from training onwards to help with the human side of it. But also, is it all right to come back to something you said earlier, just what you kind of notice, because, you know, as a therapist, we have supervision. We have to have ways of kind of managing how we hear stuff because we're essentially a sponge. We absorb emotions, images. You said you remember things that people tell you. It's just, you know, the tricky stuff, the impact of that and how you manage that, if that's all right to ask.
In myself?
Yeah, and generally, whether there's any support for people. What do you do with all that stuff that you hear?
I suppose... I mean, I feel really grateful that they can feel they can open up to me. It makes me feel that, it makes me feel that I they're comfortable to open up to me and I give off that aura that I'm trusted and, you know, it is a safe place. And I think because what we normally talk about, I've experienced or I know someone who's experienced it.
You've got that lived experience, which is so meaningful to people.
Yeah.
I think that's a I
try not to give advice because it's not my place, but I'll always say what I did and what I found helpful. And then normally before they leave the shop, I'll just always say, you know, look after yourself and just make sure you just keep talking.
But I think that's the most important thing. And somebody listening who's a barber might think, I don't have these conversations because I don't know what to say or I don't know what the right and the wrong. And that's actually for a lot of people have that problem of I don't know how to problem solve or fix or what to do. So I will avoid the difficult conversation. I think what you've just done there and what you can continue to do through your kind of training and education with barbers, but also the public that come in, is just helping people to know you don't have to be this problem solver. It's just about providing a safe space, signposting people, but allow, that's the most important bit, I think, for people.
You don't have to say, so how's your life? What's going on in your life? It's not because that will just rub people up the wrong way. And that's why I feel it's so important that all you've got to do is just ask how someone is. And that can go, that's with any industry or any walks of life. Because you don't know how long someone's been bottling something up. You don't know their support network. I've got an amazing support network of family, my partner, friends. But sometimes I still feel alone because they don't get what's going on in my head. So I think for some people, they may have amazing support, but actually talking to someone who they don't know and has actually just given them a platform to say, how are you? And then at the end of the conversation, you think, And then at the end of the conversation, they're then like, well, this guy gets it because he's experienced it.
It's the role of what we call validation, isn't it? you know, quite often we can be in the seat of minimizing, oh, that's nothing to worry about, it'll pass. Oh, you think that's bad, my friends had X, Y, Z. So we kind of sometimes can fall into that, either on purpose or because we just don't know what to say. Oh, it'd be fine, don't worry, that's nothing to cry about. Or, you know, the kind of very British culture. But also the maybe just gloss over things because I don't know what to do and how to fix this. But kind of what you've said, that's quite profound, that anybody listening to this, if you're worried about it, just checking in, how are you, and asking again. There's that kind of, how are you really? Maybe we'll grab that. If you're with someone and it isn't the right time to catch them, or they're with someone else, just going, should we have that coffee? Do you want to meet up and have that walk?
Yeah.
Or next time you're in, let's have a chat about that thing. So you're kind of just removing all of these barriers and all of that anxiety. And you're right, a lot of people can have fantastic support networks, but you might have certain people you talk to about things. And if you're somebody in the family and you're holding stuff for other people already, you might not feel able or that you want to be sharing your stuff, but that's okay. I think that's a really important point there, that it's okay if you would prefer to speak to someone else about it. And again, these are all just, I don't know why I think it's always cheesy that way, but like normalizing these kind of conversations, that it isn't easy to check in on people, but we can do it, and there's no right or wrong way to do it. But we just, you know, you'll get to know someone and it's a feel sometimes, isn't it? You know, that person that's quiet, how are you? What happened with that thing we were talking about last time? Do we want to go there today or should we leave it? Sometimes a little bit of kind of sarcasm or humour can even just help with some powerful stuff, can't it?
So experiencing that. So I sort of then, so I'm doing a course. It's like government funded. So it's only like a level two in awareness in mental health. So it goes into like depression, anxiety, OCD, ADHD. And it's funny because although I'm learning about it, there's a lot of it, it's like, well, I've experienced that. So again, it's relatable.
Doesn't that just say something as well, actually, that how many people might and not realize?
So I was diagnosed with ADHD 3 weeks ago. So now that I have that now to look at and look back at things in my life and think, I can see why I did that, or there's things I do now that. And I think now that things like that are being acknowledged and talking about stuff is becoming more of a thing, it allows people to sort of take a look at themselves and think, actually, what is going on in my head? Because you know, something's not right.
And that it's okay if you're noticing something, and it's okay to start small and trying to look at what that is.
And I went to my GP and I said, look, I had these traits and it's something I've had since childhood. And they said, well, let's put you for an ADHD diagnosis. And it come back that I did. So, and that was me opening up to my GP. So although I'd spoke to my family about it, I thought if I speak to my GP, and then, so again, talking helped me find a diagnosis in something I didn't realise that I had.
And I'm wondering why, hearing your lived experience, that difference between should I go to my GP, is it scary, what can it mean, to have someone who went, well, I went that way and this is my story, I think could be quite powerful for people.
And it is that cementing that all this all materialized just through me talking. It's doesn't really do it justice. You just say, oh, go and talk to someone. Oh, okay, then that's fine. But actually, no, really go and talk to someone and try and find a solution for what's troubling you.
So I'm wondering how many people listening there, because sometimes that's such a good point, that the talking thing sometimes gets minimized as not being enough. But I always think people sometimes can overthink mental health and ways to manage it, that sometimes as well, just every day, small. You mentioned at the beginning that, you know, part of your project is about the kind of connections and conversations. So helping people have, you know, post-pandemic, a lot of people lost skills and lost confidence.
Yeah.
didn't know how to check in. We've had, you know, a massive increase in mental health issues, cost of living crisis. We've almost got this perfect storm. So what you're doing also, yeah. I'm just thinking for the people who may be more lonely or isolated, that the conversation with their biobar might be the only conversation they have all week, other than a queue in a shop, for example. It's just, even if it's not about kind of more formal mental health issues, just checking in and what you're doing for people's mental health in that way. Because loneliness, according to the World Health Organization, is one of the key issues at the moment, and it impacts mental health, physical health so much.
And that's my point of, you could have a fantastic support network, but you can still feel lonely.
Absolutely.
Which so is it's really sad, but it's reality. Because,
and it's helping people, that's psychoeducation, that's helping people recognize. Some people think loneliness is just the absence of other people or an elderly demographic who are on their own in their home. But you, as you say, there are different types of loneliness. Go Google it. Yeah. It's quite interesting. You can have a really supportive partner, but be isolated from the rest of the world. You know, you can be really isolated at home, but have good support networks outside. And that's okay, but it's about recognizing how loneliness shows up. And the difference between alone and loneliness. I was talking to a friend about this week, that people get those two things muddled up. If you live alone, you are lonely. You can have a really fulfilled, valued life and lots of connections, but be alone. But it's why sometimes people then miss loneliness, because they think you've got a spouse, you've got a family, you've got all these people around you. But that barber checking in, how are you really, might just then give you a different view.
Because I've experienced it myself, where I've spoken to people and I've come away and thought, no, you don't get it. You just don't get it. So although you've done your best and your intentions are good, I come away feeling probably more frustrated, because I've gone to open up to someone. And you just not always, but some people can disregard it, or some people can just brush it off. And then you think, you just don't get it. And now I feel even more alone, because I've tried to open up and actually it's just fallen on, it feels like it's fallen on deaf ears, although it hasn't.
But just what that's like, kind of viscerally, emotionally, cognitively, to be in that situation where you've tried to open up and you've been met with something unhelpful. And actually, I think that's quite an important thing for barbers, trainee barbers, to kind of know, is that actually they're probably one of a kind of a key set of people in society who are having this footfall of people, where you are probably, you know, you've got your literally nose to the ground in terms of what's happening in your communities, who's lonely, who's isolated, signposting to other things, but also picking up these issues, but also then equipping them with the skills to know what to do when someone might take that massive step to reach out. But if you're not maybe equipped and leave them maybe invalidated, that can be very impactful.
Which is why I say it is difficult, because not all barbers and you don't go into the profession to be a mental health specialist. But there is an opportunity to prevent someone from, you know, going further down a hole. And there might be things that they say that barbers may miss, because it's not, you know, it's not, they're not used to that sort of thing. So it's a hard balance, because you don't want to push it too much, but also you want to be able to provide somewhere that is safe and there is help if needed. So I think that's where I'm trying to fit into the middle of trying to provide something for those that want to be able to provide that service for their shop.
I think it's a wonderful mix. It's preventative, but it's also a nice mix of kind of psychoeducation. So you're kind of allowing people to start to learn about what conversations can look like, kind of signs, flags, signposting, how to deal with difficult conversations, your own stuff, their stuff, is all sorts of stuff there around boundaries, aren't there? And I think actually that model, you think how many other sectors that could apply to, how many people in our communities are holding and hearing stuff. I do a lot of work with the voluntary sector. They're hearing and holding more than ever before post-pandemic. And they don't necessarily get training in how to deal with that, or how to deal with their own observations of hearing things from the public. So it's kind of work. Is there anything, so kind of going forward, while you're kind of on a podcast, is there anything that you particularly need help with? What do you need to help you take this forward? Do you know?
I think it's just things like this. So the podcast, and just getting myself, or getting the organization into places that is just well advertised. And so I speak a lot with other mental health groups that target other sectors, and, you know, like we share each other's posts, and it's difficult because obviously mine is barber related. It can sort of feel that it's just more prone to that industry. Which it is. But I mean, I'm sort of trying to now, because with barbering and hairdressing, you get like shows up in London or Manchester that showcase new equipment. So that's something I want to do. I want to just be able to get like a stand in a barber show and promote what I'm trying to do.
So people sharing anyone in kind of the mental health sector or wider, you might, sometimes in social media, it doesn't take long to just share something for someone. People, I don't think, are always that great at that, but it can mean big things for people. Just that share, getting it in front of different sets of eyes, and even just having conversations about, hey, I heard this podcast about Beyond the Clippers. Do you know what? You know, it's just, you never know who that's going to then reach. So just, it doesn't take much. It's always the power you have. Share.
Comment. Yeah. Yeah.
It boosts you up in the algorithm.
And I mean, some of my posts are barber specific, but some aren't. So other people can use that for their own, whatever their mental health aims or industry is.
Today, this is, you know, if we hadn't used the word barber, actually so much of it is so useful for all of our communities, checking in with mental health, how to have conversations, how to hold space for each other. It's far reaching. Yeah. So if people want to find out more about you, because they're going to want to, where do you hang out? How do we find you? How do we reach you?
So, Beyond the Clippers, mainly on Instagram and Facebook. So the Facebook is a closed group, which I run. It's just because I have a bit of a disclaimer before you join about what you can and can't, what you can and can't say, and to not share anything that people are posting. So I mean, my aim is to get posters in all barbershops. So just keep, so just keep an eye out.
Contact you, they can just message you through the Instagram too.
I either send it via a PDF for them to print, or I'll send it out in the post. There's no charge or anything like that. It's just slowly building up this foundation to spread it nationally. Really,
so you said you could do with five of you. We're having this conversation before we hit record. You should just do this yourself, which is also incredible. It just shows, doesn't it, when something is really passionate. We're talking about the journey, not the end point. The journey is really important. That you're doing this in your own time. You're evolving it. You're seeing what's needed. That's really kind of grassroots stuff, isn't it? It's lovely. It's a really preventative model. It's not this kind of rote learnt sticky plaster model around mental health, which just doesn't work in the longer term. So I always ask everyone, I know we've had loads of things, but I'm showing my age now, kind of, if I was to ask you for a signature move, what's one little adversity takeaway that you could leave us with?
A signature move, how do you mean?
So what's one little nugget of information, one little thing that you would like us to take away in terms of emotional health, barbers, that might resonate? I know we've had lots of things in the last 45 minutes.
I mean, for me, it's so important just to start that conversation of a start of a haircut with how are you doing, just see where that goes. It could come to nothing, which a lot of time it does. But ultimately, it could be the catalyst for someone to get the help they need. That's my biggest thing of just starting a conversation with asking how someone is, and then you've given them the power then to reply however they want to reply.
Absolutely.
And then you just go with the conversation.
Taking the pressure off everybody. I've really enjoyed having you on.
Thank you. Thank you.
We're connected as well. So I'll make sure these things are in the show notes, but get over to Instagram, Beyond the Clippers. Share, read, talk, have these conversations. I'm mum of two boys.
Feel free to send me a DM or anything. Yeah, it's always, I'm always open to talk.
Start that conversation.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for coming on.
No, thank you, Tara.
Food for thought. My brain is buzzing with ideas because I just think it's a fantastic thing. And sometimes people think about these things, but they don't do. And there's a big difference between people that think and do. And you're a doer. And I know sometimes it can be quite hard when you're own doing things, but keep going because this is resonating with people.
I think personal experience has helped that as well. It's the motivation to help others because I know what it feels like. For me, it's that motivation of, well, I needed something back then. Now let me try and give it to someone else.
Yeah, pretty powerful. So it's thing that you can do, right?
Yeah, and it doesn't take a lot either. It really doesn't. So
that's what I'm going to take away from today. It's just those little things, isn't it? I'm going to go to my local barber's later and say, right, you need to follow. That's one thing I can do today that's practical. Get there.
Yeah, thank you.
Get a poster too. But this has been a pleasure, absolute pleasure. It's really nice to kind of put a face to the name as well. So thank you, Danny. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you. No, thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Adversity Psychologist podcast. I'm Dr. Tara Quintarillo, and it's been lovely having you along to listen to this episode. If you want to find more about me, you can find me at drtara.co.uk. So you'll see everything I'm up to, my media work, my collaborations, my clinical work, if you're interested in that. And of course, all the other episodes of the Adversity Psychologist podcast. If you're interested in coming on, you can also contact me and let me know what you would like to come and talk about. I'd love to hear from you.